If you would like to work directly with Dr. Cole to maximize your sleep quality with a comprehensive sleep coaching program, or if you're concerned that you have sleep apnea, or simply just want a second opinion consultation, she's now available to see patients in New Jersey, New York, California, and Georgia, with more states coming soon. Please visit oak.care/sleep for a complete list of telemedicine services with transparent pricing. You deserve rapid access to quality sleep care with a physician you can trust to have your back every step of the way on your journey to better sleep.
Hi, I'm Dr. Allison Cole, sleep medicine specialist and bona fide chronic insomniac. Welcome to the Sleep is My Waking Passion podcast. Remember, knowledge is empowerment, and if applied correctly, it can help you biohack your way to a better night of sleep, just like I did. Hello, everyone. Welcome. Welcome. We're season three now. This is so cool. I'm very excited to have Dr. Stacey Ochoa with us again. She did an episode that we had such a great convo, but we ended up focusing a lot on pediatric sleep and how dentists can help in that. And I really, really wanted to pivot and talk a lot more about sleep apnea in adults and how dentists can help. So as I mentioned, Stacey is based in Missouri. She is part of Precision Dental Care. She also is the founder of the ASAP Pathway. She's got a ton of accolades. You are just a busy bee, lady. So thank you so much for coming back and deciding to chat with me. I so loved our conversation last time. It was so cool.
Thank you. Thanks for having me again. I did too. I had a great time. And I feel like we're definitely kindred spirits that when you find somebody else that loves sleep as much as you, you get to like nerd out together. And some people look at me and eye roll because I love it so much because it's so important. But I'd love talking to you and I love your podcast. You do an amazing job, Allison. Amazing job.
And I love your podcast too. So you guys know she's a podcast host too. So if I didn't spit that out there, and she has like spoken to some big names that are in the sleep world. So, I mean, it's just really cool that we could both like sort of synergize and get together and do some of our talking and educational points. So very briefly, guys, I've had previous episodes on them, so check them out. We're talking about obstructive sleep apnea. So we're talking about the most common form of sleep apnea. When we refer to sleep apnea, we basically mean that you fall asleep and then your airway closes off. And if it's closing off more than 5 times an hour, we label it, quote, mild. If it's more than 15, it's moderate. If it's more than 30 times an hour, we say that it's severe. And it doesn't mean that your airway has to close off completely. It might be near completely, and we start to see significant falls in your oxygen levels, at least 3%. And if you're over the age of 65, it's 4%, but that's an arbitrary Medicare criteria. We can go, that's a totally different discussion that none of us really think is accurate. But that being said, one of the things that we really do know about sleep apnea is that it causes a lot of issues that are far-reaching. It causes us to feel chronically sleep-deprived because our sleep is crappy. It causes us to have issues that are related to increased cardiovascular risk. We don't function as well. We may be too tired during the day. We may have difficulty sleeping, so the exact opposite, insomnia. The list goes on and on, and it's literally one of the most common sleep disorders aside from insomnia probably in this country. So traditionally, we're always talking about, okay, well, you have a machine, you have a mask, and the machine is called CPAP or continuous positive airway pressure. That's traditionally what we order for patients. More specifically, you use auto CPAP machines these days. But some people have come to me often and have described that, hey, you know, my dentist was mentioning they can treat sleep apnea. So I'm going to turn it over to Stacey to talk to us about something called oral appliance therapy. So Stacey, the ball is in your court, my lady.
All right. All right. I think this is something that I'm a fan of CPAP. We need that CPAP, especially if you're severe, which like you said earlier, if it's more than 30 times an hour, we label that severe. And the gold standard is a CPAP. However, if you cannot tolerate your CPAP, there is an alternative, a very researched, viable alternative that is saving and changing lives every day, and that's oral appliance therapy or mandibular advancement device therapy. I also like to point out, if you're mild to moderate, oral appliance therapy and CPAP therapy are considered basically equivalents. CPAP is almost 100% of the time going to keep that airway open. We know that. It's just the compliance factor. So for mild to moderate, when you compare the efficacy of CPAP, then you add in the compliance of CPAP, and then how many hours a night someone might be wearing the CPAP, and then you compare it to oral appliance therapy, they're equal therapies. Once you get to severe, we can't always normalize that severe patient with an oral appliance fully down to a less than 5. However, sometimes we really can. But even if, let's just say you're severe, you're not wearing it at all, if I can improve you 80%, 70%, that's better than 0%. And you just have this really horrible quality of life or risk of a heart attack in your sleep. We just have patients that come to us each week that have either tried CPAP and they just were not compliant for various reasons, intolerant, we call it, which is where, look, I tried it, I gave it a good try, but my nose had a lot of infections in it. My eyes were drying out. I have marks all over my face. My middle ears were being blown out. I had gastric distension. There's some side effects with CPAP. A lot of patients too that are on CPAP love it. And they're like, it's changed my life. So you just don't know what population you're going to fall into. And we don't really have in sleep medicine yet a predictor. We know CPAP can blow an airway open. We put you on an AutoPAP or you have a PSG split night and that CPAP blows your airway open. Success, right? Well, are they going to wear it? So we just don't know who those people are, right? Oral appliance therapy. Here's what it is. I explain to patients, it's like a retainer. So it fits over your top teeth and it fits over your bottom teeth. So it's got different styles, and we'll go over why certain people might do better with different styles. But some people, it's just a matter of stabilizing that lower jaw. So, and I see, Allison, you have an Airhead model behind you.
I do.
But basically, obstructive sleep apnea, usually it's the tongue is falling back, the soft palate or the tongue. They're collapsing that airway. They're closing it off. And it's basically you're choking. You're choking in your sleep. What the oral appliance does is in some patients, it's just a matter of stabilizing that lower jaw so it doesn't fall back. And if you're not watching me right now, I'm basically, a lot of people are laying on their back. Gravity is not our friend, but the jaw just, it gets lax, it hangs, it's falling back. And that tongue and that soft palate are falling back into that airway. And as a dentist, I take cone beam images on my patients and I can even see, granted it's a dynamic airway, I'm just seeing a static image, but I can see sometimes when that airway is just like really, really tiny and I'm like, wow, I can only imagine when you're asleep and on your back, you're probably struggling with your airway. So it just opens some conversation for patients to go get that sleep study, visit with the sleep physician, get the diagnosis. But sometimes it's a matter of just stabilizing the mandible so it doesn't fall back. So you'll have an upper retainer and a lower retainer.
Mandible being the bottom jaw, guys, okay?
Lower jaw. Yeah, I'm speaking some jargon here you might not understand. The lower jaw falls back, gets lax. We're stabilizing it against the upper jaw. So some oral appliances might have a little bar on the side that keeps the lower jaw from falling back. Some might have little wings. So the one Allison's holding, yeah, that's the Erbst.
Yeah, this is the Erbst.
That one has the bar, so it keeps that lower jaw from falling back. And then some of them have wings. Some of them might have a little tiny apparatus in the front that just connects to the bottom. So there's all different designs. And if you have a dentist that's experienced in dental sleep medicine, which I highly, highly recommend, because legally, any dentist can make an oral appliance for obstructive sleep apnea or snoring, but are they someone that really understands what they're doing? Can they manage the side effects? Do they work well with your sleep physician? And what really matters to me too is, are they going to follow up with the sleep physician and prove efficacy? Because just because you wear a device and you feel like you're snoring less, what we find is a lot of times the patient might need to be titrated a little further beyond what they subjectively think is the right position to be truly resolved or managed with their apnea. So you want to make sure your dentist works closely with your sleep physician, gets a prescription from your sleep physician because it needs to be ordered by a sleep physician, primary care, an ENT, someone that is managing your sleep and understands your sleep health. And then we want to make sure it's effective. So typically about sometimes 12 weeks in, 8 to 12 weeks after we have you in a device, we are having you use a lot of times metrics at home. It could be sometimes your own Fitbit, I Like SleepSat, Sleep Image, to help me titrate that position. And I'm getting feedback objectively from the metrics, but subjectively too, from your sleep partner, from you. How are you feeling? Are you dreaming again? Your partner back in bed with you again? Are you off the couch? Are you out of the spare bedroom? So we look at all the things about your quality of life and the differences, the energy levels back, less brain fog. A lot of times guys will say, oh my gosh, I'm feeling a little better in the bedroom, because we know that when you sleep better, your testosterone improves because that is released during sleep as well. Subjective is important, but I have so many patients that think, oh, I'm feeling better. My spouse doesn't hear me snore anymore. I must be completely resolved. And like 9 times out of 10, I got to do a little bit more titrating just to get them to that sweet spot to make sure that they're under that 5. And then I send back to the sleep physician and get their blessing, or whoever is managing the sleep, whether it's the primary care, sleep physician, ENT, someone that's comfortable managing sleep. And then we agree, this is a great position for this patient. And then it's really important to do an annual follow-up with your dentist and stay in touch with who's managing your sleep as well, because there are some side effects to oral appliance therapy. I mentioned the side effects with CPAP earlier, right? Plenty of side effects with CPAP. There are side effects with oral appliances. Sometimes your teeth move. Sometimes you might have some jaw position changes. But the majority of people that have that, it doesn't affect their quality of life, and they don't want to stop the therapy. I've had probably 2 patients in 23 years that said, you know, my teeth are moving. I told them they could wear a retainer every morning when they wake up to make sure they don't keep moving. And they're like, you know what? I just don't want to do that. I think I'm going to go back on my CPAP. But that's really, it's really rare. Most people, the side effects are very minimal. The compliance rate's really high. The comfort level is pretty high with an oral appliance. You just want to make sure that it's effective. So no point in wearing something that's not helping you. So we have to make sure we do the follow-up testing and make sure that this is the right position.
So I have a few questions for you. Okay, so I'll start with just asking, because my general understanding was, and you're right, there are going to be people that for whatever reason, oral appliance doesn't seem to work for them at all. Like it's just, you know, they get it and then they're like, it's doing nothing.
Right.
Then there's folks that have a superb response where you're like, wow, you're severe, but somehow your sleep apnea has completely gone away. On average, my understanding is it's roughly, you can expect-ish, maybe a 50% reduction in the number of events. Would you say that that's kind of where the stats are now, or have they changed over time? I had heard that, but that's, you know, that's from a few years ago.
So if you're severe, it's safe to say we could probably get about a 50% reduction, maybe even an 80% reduction in events, possibly. There was a technique that was being used called the Matrix, where they were doing a remote control advancement device in a PSG, and they were looking for responders, people that we could predict that would respond to oral appliance therapy. They're not using that as much anymore. Actually, I just did a lecture in town with another pediatric orthodontic dental sleep specialist, and she said that Stanford is actually coming out with an ultrasound technology that's looking for predictors to see if advancement appliances, they can predict from that, because then there's not a sleep study. You don't have to do a DICE, which is a drug-induced sleep endoscopy where they put you to sleep, and then they see where the collapse is and they advance the jaw and see if they can remove the collapse. So there's DICE. There was the remote control device to determine predictors. Right now, there's really not a good predictor. So we go by statistics, like you said. I tell people if you're mild to moderate, I have like an 80% chance we're going to probably get you resolved and managed. I just don't know if you're in the 80 or if you're in the 20. I don't know who those people are, except research tells us that if your pressure is around 12 centimeters of water pressure on your CPAP or less, you have a higher success rate with an oral appliance. The higher the pressure that the CPAP has to be to pretty much blow that airway open, the lower the chance of an oral appliance being successful. And there are different phenotypes. Like, let's say you're somebody that has a very retronathic or a lower jaw that's set back, that is collapsing. They tend to do better with a stabilization device because we know the problem is the mandible. Also, people that are positional apneics, the people that have apnea worse on their back, meaning that when they're on their back, their apnea is twice as bad as when they're on their side, they do better with oral appliance therapy as well.
That's one of the selection criteria for me, is that positionality, if I can get that on a sleep study.
Yes.
That's one of my criticisms with some of the newer sleep tests, actually, are they provide such amazing information, but I'm like, position really is important. Give me that data. That really is helpful for me to making decisions for folks. So some of these devices I'm contemplating in kind of bringing them to my clinical practice, but really more as adjunctive once I have them on therapy and know, just because I'm not going to have that positional data. And that really kind of stinks. Totally, totally.
It does stink. Agreed. I get very frustrated when, so I'll get a referral from a physician and they'll send me the baseline sleep study. Zero data on the positional. And again, I need that information too. It's very helpful. I mean, really, we're supposed to really, side sleeping is best for humans just from a digestive perspective, a breathing perspective. Sleeping flat on our backs, there's studies that it causes nasal congestion. So when we go supine, there's a natural fluid dynamics that happens that you get congested nasally. So that's not optimal for breathing either. So side sleeping is nice because that kind of goes with the nasal cycling that we do versus supine sleep. But let's get real. A lot of us, we don't have a positional pillow always, and we don't know what we're doing in our sleep. So we just would like.
And that's the thing with position, right? It's tricky to maintain a side sleeping position all night, because any of us who've had you know, my shoulder starts hurting, my neck is cricked. And so you kind of naturally, I don't know, we just sort of naturally move in our sleep. So it can be very, very tricky because, you know, the ones that we have out there nowadays for like positional belts, literally it will look like some form of a belt that you blow up, or is like a piece of foam that keeps you on your side. And a lot of people are like, I kind of don't want to do that. They do make some interesting tech, and I don't know if Respironics is still making it, but they had something called the Night Balance for a bit, which was pretty cool because it would just sort of gently vibrate to say, keep you off of your back. I've seen ones where they make them in the neck.
Oh.
But if my neck started vibrating, I think that would make me crazy. So I sort of extrapolate from my personal preferences a bit to say, I think this would not be very popular. So it has not been something I've talked about it, but I don't necessarily recommend it a great deal of the time.
There's some tech out there, like you said, to try to keep people on their side. Gentle vibration reminders when you're going to your back. But then I'm also like, golly, are they, you know, is there some sleep fragmentation going on there too? Like you're waking up, vibration, vibration, vibration. I don't know, right?
Right. So that's the flip side, because, you know, you'd have to, especially for the physical blocks, right? If you're strapping something against your back, then it's like, okay, I want to be off my shoulder. Now I have to physically get up and I'm like, you're either rolling like a burrito from onto your stomach or something, or you're physically sitting up to reposition, which is also awkward. So,
and can we just say for a minute, like, I just feel for patients. I do. I mean, we're patients too. We're people too. We sleep. I understand what you're saying. You know, it's, you know, the struggle is real. We all want that really good sleep. And my heart breaks for people on really high pressures with extreme sleep apnea. I mean, to feel that pressure that they're having to experience, it's like sticking your head out a window going 100 miles an hour. And it's like, okay, breathe. You're like, it's a lot. Thank God for BiPAPs and all the different things that have, and the changes that are coming. But it's so rewarding to be able to help someone get a good night's sleep. You just see the person change, their personality, their relationships. I mean, you sleep deprive somebody, that's the quickest way to find out how unhappy somebody can get. Like, you want to see the worst side of a person, sleep deprive them, right?
Yes. I could literally do it another entire episode about how I truly 100% believe, without a shadow of a doubt, that chronic sleep deprivation completely led to my degree of burnout, which was so scary. I've never felt that way before, and I hope never to feel that way again. There's a lot of reasons for why that occurred, but if you want to have taken a match and lit it and thrown it on a fire that was already kind of smoldering from all sorts of other reasons, so, so true. So I want to get back to oral appliances because I still have so many questions. Okay, so one of my questions is, when you see a patient, a couple of things that would come to mind that I would automatically like never think an oral appliance would be a great idea for them, and I wanted to get your thoughts on it. You know, one of the things that I would be concerned with is if someone really has a super stiff jaw, like they just have very little mobility, I would think that an oral appliance might logically, you just can't advance them that much. They don't move their jaw that much. And the other would be like, you know, if you have like a 22-inch neck, I mean, are we really doing much for them? I'm just curious as to what a dentist's perspective is on patients like that.
There are definitely phenotypes and anatomical aspects that are like, we're going up against difficulties with really large necks. If we're looking at, like especially like bodybuilders or those, you know, maybe high BMIs with, you know, that tongue is huge. And we have fat pads in our tongue too. So when you gain weight in your tongue too. It's not just all over your body. Your airway actually gets smaller. But I do a test in my chair. Some dentists have rhinometers and pharyngometers where they can actually test the flow as they're not only advancing that lower jaw, but sometimes even opening the vertical, separating the teeth to give more volume in the mouth that way for the tongue, we can see an increase in flow. So it's not only the vertical, it's how much do we advance and add the vertical. So I do some testing in the chair with the patient laying back. We do some snore testing. I test vertical. I test the advancement. So I'm not going in blind like, all right, let's try an oral appliance. If I cannot get that snore to go away at all, I also test, I do caudal maneuver, and which is where you open the nose a little bit and see if that snore improves, because we have airway collapse in many levels of the airway. And it starts with the nostrils. It starts with the turbinates. It starts there and then it goes back to the soft palate. That's the next level of soft tissue. And then we've got the tongue, and then we've sometimes got the epiglottis. So yes, BMI can be against us. But if they can't wear their CPAP at all, Allison, I'm like, let me try to keep this airway open. Let's just do it. Let's see how you do. Maybe it gets you 50% improvement in that apnea hypopnea index, but you're getting something, and it's better than nothing.
Right. And then maybe combining that even, right? So one of the things we haven't really touched base on is, hey, maybe you would tolerate it if we like were able to lower the pressure because we could reduce some of the airway resistance for you, and you're sort of using an oral appliance with that.
Yes, 100%. It's like CPR. What do you do when you give CPR? We advance that jaw so that we can get the air down easier. So if my advancing the mandible or stabilizing that lower jaw isn't enough for you to breathe room air on your own, then we might have to put some positive pressure in addition to that. And maybe I can get your pressure from a 15 down to a 10 and change your life.
That totally. And it makes a difference. Absolutely. Especially if you're having aerophagia issues. And yes, you can switch people. That's aerophagia, basically that sense you've like swallowed air and then your belly feels all bloated. And there are people that we can just switch over to BiPAP for that, but also being able to lower the pressure. And I've definitely had patients that even on BiPAP, they've just such high upper airway resistance that we really need to do that. So that combination can be huge for them. Totally.
And a lot of people with sleep apnea, they're three times more likely to grind their teeth. So the beauty of the oral appliance is I'm protecting your teeth. I'm stabilizing your airway. And sometimes we just have to either have, like you said, supplemental oxygen, supplemental BiPAP, supplemental CPAP, something in addition. And, you know, let's address the BMI. If you're sleeping better, your hormones, your ghrelin, your leptin, they're more regulated. It's easier for you to lose weight. So I know we all want to wave a wand and make everything better all at once, but we have to start somewhere, and it's sleep. Sleep is so important if you want to lose that weight.
I look at it as like trying to do the immediate thing, which is let's correct sort of the elephant in the room, which is the sleep disordered breathing as much as we can. And then let's start to implement things that quite frankly take time in order for them to be effective, right? Really like lifestyle changes, maybe even adding some pharmacotherapy for obesity, if that's appropriate. You know, there's other creative ways. I'm going to be very curious to see how we apply some of these newer agents to the sleep apnea population, because I totally think there's probably a pretty significant role there.
Oh, huge. When you've got 75% of the American population considered almost obese these days, I mean, I think there's going to be definitely a component with diet, nutrition, weight loss, airway, sleep health. It has to overlap. I mean, you can't separate them. All of these comorbidities go together and they overlap with each other. We just have to start somewhere. And that's, you got to breathe. Your brain and your heart need you to breathe at night. And then we can get some restful night's sleep, some improved sleep. And then maybe in a month or two after you're feeling better, let's add something else. Let's address something else. You mentioned the jaw movements. It's very important. I do check for that. So if someone cannot advance their mandible, so I just have people just move their jaw out and I measure how far they can go from their resting position and how far out. I mean, if they can't move at all, it's not necessarily a no. I just tell them, look, it might be I'm just stabilizing your jaw at night so it's not falling back, but I can't titrate you much further than this. But I haven't come across anybody like that. It's very rare. Most people can advance their mandible at least 5-6 millimeters, some up to 10-12 millimeters. So yeah, I do check for that.
Bruxing. So bruxing meaning grinding your teeth, which you had mentioned. I was curious about, you know, does that affect selection of a device, for example, in the type of device you had mentioned, one with wings? Are there certain appliances that you will sort of be like, in that population, I would pick this type of style? Because grinding your teeth, guys, is basically like a side-to-side movement, and we're moving your jaw forward, but you also got to think like you got to kind of manage both, right? So if you move the jaw forward, but you can't really move the jaw side to side, that, I mean, I've had patients use like over-the-counter stuff and they're like, my teeth are getting loose. And I'm like, yeah, because you have no mobility there.
Yes. So definitely one of the criteria is if they have severe bruxism or grinding, that is definitely a selection criteria. So for instance, I would not put someone that has severe grinding, severe bruxism. And you see that, I mean, you see it in women, but boy, the guys can really go to town. It's just because of their muscle fibers are a little different than women. Women clench a lot, men tend to grind. But I have a lot of women grinders too, so I don't want to leave you ladies out. We can grind with the best of them. But I definitely would not put them in something like a Herbst, because I mean, they're just going to bust that. That's the Herbst is the little metal rods on the side. It doesn't give a lot of side. Look, as you're moving, you can't really move it side to side very much. So it has some give, but there are other designs. ProSomnus has a really good design with their Evo selection. So it's a more flexible material, so it will break less. Plus, we can move the wings out a little bit wider in those wing styles and give the patient more lateral movement. Also, there's some research that grinding and restless leg syndrome kind of go hand in hand too. So it's like sometimes it's not even an airway thing. People are grinding and it's not even about the airway. It could just be a movement disorder related to maybe low ferritin. But if they also have apnea, I'm mindful if they have restless leg to ask those questions, because sometimes people with obstructive sleep apnea may have restless leg syndrome as well. Those are some grinders too. I mean, they're clenching and grinding. So yeah, you want a device that gives you lateral movement. So be sure to, sometimes it's evident that you grind your teeth to the dentist, but it's not always super evident. So be sure to tell your sleep dentist that, boy, I grind. I'm going to be able to move my jaw freely and not feel, I don't want to break my device or feel too locked up.
So I had shared with you before we were taping that I had actually done a sleep study, and I had done a sleep image study, which unfortunately doesn't give you the position, guys. Give me the position. I love the technology that you have there. it had some mild sleep apnea. And it, truth be told, I was out with friends and had a couple glasses of wine. So I'm sure that that impacted it. I had the classic, right? The classic sleep of kind of deep sleep in the beginning, then some fragmentation and some REM at the end. And it was hysterical. I was like, oh, you can tell exactly what Dr. Cole's been up to that evening. But with that in mind, I had the opportunity to try an oral appliance. And I wanted to know if my experience was similar to what you had experienced with your patients. You know, definitely the upper seems to feel okay. It's definitely, I will say, guys, it is a kind of a weird feeling because it's really molded to your teeth. So you really notice that there is something that is kind of fitting almost perfectly into your teeth. The bottom for me, it just feels a little bit like certain teeth are a little bit more irritated. So you had suggested maybe they just need to go in and kind of shave that down. How much tweaking do you need to do for some of these appliances?
You know what? It is hit or miss. We delivered a sleep device yesterday on a lady, and I mean, it just was like, boom, like butter. Just went in. We didn't have to adjust anything. And again, sometimes it fits great in the chair. And a lot of times that's the case these days because everything's 3D printed. And I mean, the printing is amazing and the fit is amazing versus years ago, how we used to process oral appliances. Now with all the printing, it's so accurate. So sometimes we don't have to adjust at all. But when they go home and wear it, we do our follow-up 1 week call. How you doing? How you feeling? You know what? My teeth are feeling a little tight. So something to remember is the upper jaw usually isn't the issue, right? The upper jaw, it fits fine. It's that lower jaw that we're stabilizing, and that's the jaw that's moving. So especially if you maybe slept on one side most of the night, you might have more of the pressure on one part of the teeth more than the other. So it could just be a positional fluky thing. I tell people, you know, give it another week or two. If you have the same consistent tightness or soreness around your teeth, please come in and let us just relieve the inside because it fits so well. So especially in the lower front teeth, we sometimes see a little crowding with patients. Their teeth aren't perfectly aligned. That's more people than not. And because they're a little overlapped and the fit is so accurate, that can get really tight in there. So we just have to relieve the inside of that around those maybe more crowded teeth. Mm. And people will put it in. They're like, oh, that's it right there. It just felt like it was being squeezed maybe a little too tight. So be sure to tell your dentist if it's consistent. But that's not an uncommon finding at all. And it's an easy fix.
And you mentioned something that, and he actually gave me this. He always does this for his patients, which is the part that you wear a bit in the morning. It just sits front and bottom, and it really sort of helps to kind of realign your jaw to what you're used to, essentially. I've definitely noticed that that's helpful. What I didn't realize is it was suggested to me that because we're pulling, there's some fluid that can build up in those TMJ sort of joint area, and you want some of that fluid to like drain. So you actually have to kind of wait 15 minutes, which I didn't know. So like, I kind of feel like there's this whole process that even as a physician who has ordered a ton of oral appliances, I was not aware of that. So I was curious if you could...
Of all the nuances.
Yeah, I was curious if you wouldn't mind sharing with our listeners.
Yeah.
What should they expect? Like, okay, now I have the oral appliance and okay, they're talking all about how it might need to get certain tweaks or what does the follow-up look like? And also, how the heck do I even care for this appliance? Like,
yes.
What do I do? Because that was also like the Pandora's box of like, oh crap, that's what I need to do? Okay. You know?
And I tell people it's like when you were in Invisalign or if you've ever been in Invisalign or you have retainers, or you have braces and retainers, you have to take care of them. I sometimes tell people to use the same thing, Retainer Bright. It helps clean your retainers. It helps clean the oral appliance. Some people say use like disinfectant soap and clean your device with that. I have been recently using hypochlorous acid, which sounds really awful, acid, but hypochlorous acid is actually 15 times stronger than bleach, but it's safe enough to drink. And they're using it more and more in surgeries. Eye physicians are using it for eye infections, but it's basically non-iodized salt water that's basically put under electrolysis. So it has like a chlorine smell, but it's completely safe. They make little spray bottles of it and you can spray your device at night and make sure you brush it with a toothbrush. But back to your, like, what do you expect? I tell people when you first get it, your body thinks you're putting food in your mouth and you might salivate a little bit more than you're used to. Your body thinks, oh, we've got, like, is this a Big Mac? What is this? And then it realizes, so you'll have some excess salivation at first. And then the body's like, okay, this isn't food. And it gets used to it. Excess salivation is not uncommon in the beginning. Some people have it, some people don't, but it will go away. And I tell people too, you know, your first job is just to get used to it. You're not worried about advancing. You're not worried about moving anything forward. It's, can you wear this thing in your mouth all night and wake up with it? Because that's what's important. We want you wearing this all the way through all your sleep cycles. Because the one of the things with CPAP is, a lot of times it's, well, I can only wear it 4 times a night. That's the criteria that got paid for insurance. And as long as I wear it 4 hours a night, I'm good. Well, your deepest REM cycle is right before you wake up, and we want that airway patent. So that is the beauty of the oral appliances. People can sleep all night with it, and they feel that they don't have to rip it off. They get up to go to the bathroom. They don't have to take off a mask. So that part's nice. But tightness around your teeth, little tooth soreness is not uncommon. Some people have it. Some people don't. But you have to tell the dentist so they can just relieve the inside. I like to do a 1 week follow-up, then I do a 1 month follow-up, and then we do another month follow-up, and then we're pretty quickly 8 to 12 weeks doing that follow-up test with some metrics at home just to make sure we're getting efficacy, resolution, good management. I tell people also important to wear, we call it the morning positioner or the AM aligner. Your jaw has been forward or stabilized out of its normal bite position for about 8 hours, 7 to 8 hours. So when you take that device out, it's going to feel funny. Your bite's going to feel funny. Give it about 10 to 15 minutes. Let those muscles relax. I tell people if you're a morning shower person, that is the best time to put your morning positioner in, because that warm water with those muscles and that morning positioner, it can get that bite kind of back to where it used to be.
Oh, I'm going to try that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a nice little routine. You know, you get up, you get your coffee going, you know, whatever you do with your routine, that's going to buy you about 10 minutes or so. And then just jump in the shower, snap in your AM positioner. I make mine chair side. So if you get them under hot water, they would lose their shape. So don't get them under the hot water, but keep them in your mouth and just let that warm water hit your face and just those muscles just relax so that bite will go back to where it should be. I'm trying to think of all the things I tell patients. Oh, side sleeping. We want you to side sleep. It's a healthy place to sleep. It's a healthy way to sleep for your body for many reasons as we discuss. But what we'll find is the people that get the most jaw pain is the people that stick their, and you're probably not seeing me right now, but if you're listening to the podcast, I'm putting my hands up under my jaw. So if you're sleeping on your side, you have to think your jaw is being brought forward. So it's already out of its normal position. The last thing you want to do is it's being brought forward and you're pushing your jaw from the side. That's too much stress on a jaw. So some people use cervical pillows, or they'll shove a pillow up under their neck a little bit and it lands up under their jaw, or they roll their hands up and sleep with their hands under their face. Try not to do that, because that is putting too much force on that jaw when its trajectory is already being pulled this way and then you're applying a force. That is 9 times out of 10. If someone tells me they're having jaw pain, I'm like, do you sleep with a cervical pillow that kind of pushes up against your chin? They're like, oh my gosh, yes. Or I have a little pillow that I ball up underneath my jaw at night. So that's something I tell people, be very mindful that you're not putting any lateral or side forces on your jaw when you're sleeping at night too.
Are there certain credentials that people should be looking for so that, because a lot of people be like, I'll just talk to my dentist. And I'm like, I'm going to tell you right now, your dentist is going to be allowed to do an appliance for you. I don't know that that's the best use of your time, because I really think you should go to someone who's had a lot of experience with this, just for everything we've just been talking about. Are there certain credentials, educational things folks should look for when they're picking a sleep dentist?
Yes. And I personally, I'm a member of the American Academy of Dental Sleep Medicine. I'm a diplomate. So I had to go through a lot of education, you know, letters of recommendation from sleep physicians and observing sleep studies and passing an exam and having a certain number of resolution with a certain number of patients and showing documentation. So a lot went into that. So if someone is a diplomate with the American Board of Dental Sleep Medicine, so you can go to the American Academy of Sleep Medicine and look for a provider. So if someone is diplomate status, they know their stuff. They know their stuff. They know how to collaborate, which is huge. You have to collaborate with your medical colleagues. The communication is so important. I send a letter to my the managing physician when I see their patient, when I deliver the device. I send them a letter when I'm, hey, it's time for them to have their sleep study. We send them back for a sleep study with the device in, and then I send them an annual letter as to their progress. So that communication, that continuity of care is important, and your diplomates will do that. They also have qualified dentists. So they may not be a diplomate, but they're on the track, and they're called qualified dentists. I definitely would not have a dentist make a device that doesn't have education in sleep. I would ask them, what is your education level in sleep medicine? If they're like, oh, I can make you one of those things. They don't know how to manage the side effects. They don't understand sleep medicine. So it's important that they can handle and know what they're doing and work with your physician closely. So yeah, a diplomate or a qualified dentist with the American Academy of Sleep Medicine, AASM. Yes, great place to go.
Thank you. That's what I tell my patients. But if you're not going to listen to a doctor, at least listen to Dr. Ochoa,
yeah,
Doctor of Dentistry with special education. Thank you. And then my final question is, I mean, I know it's probably going to vary between location, but even in the state of New Jersey, my experience has been sometimes people have invested what seems like to be an exorbitant amount of money in my mind. When I know qualified dentists who don't charge that. So I was just wondering what a rough cost estimation might be realistic, just even in terms of like how the cost breakdown is. And also like if your experience has been good with insurance coverage, because that's been sort of spotty in the Jersey area. And then, you know, the range.
So regional, I mean, obviously I'm in the good old Midwest, so our cost of living is different than yours. So I've heard anywhere from, I mean, it's a little different. So even in our area, you know, there's anywhere from, I've seen $3,000, like for a fee for service patient, if they're coming in, they don't have medical or they don't want to work with the medical or the medical won't cover it, anywhere from, I tell people it's like having orthodontics. When you're going to get braces or Invisalign, that's going to run you around probably anywhere from $3,500 to $6,500 to have Invisalign done. And it's not saving your life, but it makes your teeth look amazing. This is actually saving your life. So, and most sleep dentists that do this, because we're following these patients and we're married to them and we're managing the side effects. It's not just the plastic device. It's that we're doing the metrics. We're seeing you for the follow-up. We're managing the side effects. It's all of it. It's the therapy. It's everything that's included. But insurance usually does reimburse the patient or pay for the patient if they are have a CPAP intolerant affidavit, if your policy includes coverage of obstructive sleep apnea and you cannot tolerate a CPAP. Almost always it does. Now, I don't know what your deductible is going to be if it's been met. There are things to be considered there. But I tell people it's like the cost of Invisalign. It's like about $4,000, $3,000. Some are $2,500. Some will take Medicare. Some will not take Medicare. That's another question. Some will, if you do have Medicare, there's only certain devices that your sleep dentist can use. Just understand that because Medicare has a criteria for what devices. So it's not that the dentist isn't wanting to give you a ProSomnus, is just, it's got to be a different type of ProSomnus or a different type of device that fits Medicare criteria. So they're held to a standard with that as well. But most sleep dentists I know, including myself, we always offer like, how can we make this affordable? Like, what's your budget? Like, how can we do something for monthly payments so that we can get you in the care you need? But I do tell people I compare it to orthodontics, the cost of orthodontics. Only it's covered by medical insurance and reimbursed by medical insurance. and it's saving your life and giving you a different quality of life. Something too, I was going to say about the AASM or AADSM, we were talking about finding a dentist. Oh, here's what I want people to understand too. I know that you, if your dentist doesn't do this, you can keep your dentist and just see a sleep dentist for this part of it. I see patients all the time that are not my dental patients. I'm not trying to take you from your dentist. I want you to stay with your dentist if you're happy and you're getting wonderful care. And I include your dentist in on my collaboration and my letters and communication too. So that's important too. When you find a sleep dentist, that they're willing to communicate and, you know, help your dentist understand what they're doing in their office as well. And that communication is there. But because people are very attached to their dentist, and that's a wonderful thing. And they're afraid that they have to leave their dentist and get a new dentist for this. And they don't. You can keep your dentist, but just you have a sleep dentist, like you have a primary care doctor.
And then you have a specialist, a sleep specialist. Yeah.
Yes. I just want people to understand that. You don't have to leave your dentist.
Oh, my goodness. Stacey, this was such a fun discussion and hugely informative. I really try to throw a lot at you that are all questions that have come up in my mind or have come up in the minds of patients that I've seen over the past decade or so. And I'm hoping that this podcast really resonates and people will listen to it, because a lot of their questions will be answered just by listening to this episode. So this was so freaking amazing. Thank you again. Such a pleasure. Ooh, exciting.
It is exciting. I love this. I was so excited to wake up, got my cup of coffee today. I'm like, I get to talk to Allison today. This is wonderful. This type of stuff, it makes me feel so good, because I know we're doing good things for people out there and giving them hope. And there's a lot of people without hope right now. And there are options for you. Thanks for having me. I really do appreciate you.
Of course.
Hello to all my fellow sleep biohackers out there. I have a call to action for you. If you are enjoying this podcast, if you feel that you are growing, you're more knowledgeable, you're feeling empowered about your sleep, that is the purpose. So please, please take the time to like and review the podcast, share it amongst your friends and family. Please follow me. If you'd like to follow me on Instagram or Facebook, I am there as well. My handle on Instagram and TikTok is AskTheSleepMD. And you can also go to my website, AskTheSleepMD.com, for more information about each of these episodes. We will be sharing with you cited articles that you can actually refer to and read yourself if you like, and lots of juicy tidbits about how to sleep better. Thank you. This podcast is made possible with the exquisite talents of Mr. Joey Salvia, my producer, Mr. Adrian Pederath, my creative director, and music by Lori Kunzel of KunzelMusic.com. Disclaimer: the statements made on this podcast have not been evaluated by the U.S. Food or Drug Administration. They are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent disease. The information provided by this podcast should not be used as individual medical advice. While I am a practicing sleep provider, I am not your sleep provider. You should always consult with your personal healthcare provider for individual recommendations and treatment.